I'm here. Another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we explore, of course, UFOs and the Paranormal. And tonight, I have a very exciting guest. His name is Craig Tews. He's a researcher, a paranormal researcher, and a filmmaker. And we're going to be talking about Gravity Hills. He actually produced and directed and wrote a short film called Gravity of Silmar, California. So we're going to be talking about that and some other mysteries that he's researched, including ghosts and Cydonia and UFOs and all sorts of interesting stuff. But before I get to our guest tonight, I want to give you, of course, a little bit of UFO news. And, of course, there is stuff going on. It's a very active year. I don't know, maybe the aliens are finally going to show themselves, but seems like there's been an awful lot of activity. First piece of interesting news is about the Virginia Flatwoods Monster. Now, this was back in September 12, 1952, actually, that a 12-foot robot-like object was sighted by a half a dozen people, including one adult and several children. Numerous people saw this object actually come across the sky and land on a hilltop in Flatwoods, Virginia, and West Virginia, and there's been a recent book written about this very interesting case by Frank Ficino, which outlines all the really events that went on all around it, including numerous other UFO sightings, landings, and lots of government involvement as well. But what's interesting, the new news on this, is that it might be made into a movie, which would be great, because there's really not enough, I think, nonfiction UFO treatments out there. And this would be a really great story, and it's surprisingly not that well known. So we'll see what happens. It takes a long time to produce a movie, especially a big blockbuster, but apparently there's an independent filmmaker in L.A. who's getting ready to put this together. So we will see. And let me see, what else do we got going on? Here's a little clip from the Journal of Hispanic Ufology. And this is about a case which took place, let me see, this was just recently, actually, in June, on June 11th. The sighting took place at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon when a Boeing 737 was flying at about 10,000 meters, 30,000 feet, heading for Mexico City from Oaxaca. Captain Edwin Adam Cuevas, the first officer, was the first to notice this UFO. It was a spherical object that was entering and exiting a cloud. And the captain did not see the UFO as he was looking at the instrument panels. But the first officer, he described this object as metallic in appearance, and he did not want to consent to, you know, releasing any more information, which is understandable. A lot of pilots are very reluctant about talking about their UFO sightings for obvious reasons, unfortunately. Okay, what else? What else? Let me see. Ah, yes. There's been recent sightings in Missouri. This is from the new issue of the MUFON UFO Journal, which has just been published. On April 9th of this year, a couple was in their home in Missouri. This was a rural part of Missouri, and they do not want the exact location released. But they were outside their house watching these lights, and there was numerous of these lights, approximately a dozen of red-orange lights that were all in a row, and they were moving left to right, and then they would go out. And they were actually able to get a video camera and videotape this. And at first they didn't want to report it, but 1 week later, on April 16th, so that's actually almost 2 weeks later, the lights returned. And it was the same type of thing, except even a more dramatic display. It lasted longer. These lights blinked on and off in very strange sequences. They looked a lot like fireballs, they said, but they were obviously not, and they seemed to be putting on some type of display. They were all in a semicircular pattern, and they couldn't really tell if they were attached to one object or not. But after this sighting, they decided to report it. And then on May 20th, they had yet another sighting. So I don't know what's going on over there, but just one of many sightings going on. And I have an even more recent sighting. This one took place actually just last week, or just over a week ago. And I don't have the exact date, but the location is in Northern California along the Highway 5, which runs the entire length of California just about. And a couple who wants to remain anonymous was driving south through Northern California when they saw a light pacing their automobile. And they became nervous because it appeared to be following them. And so they had this strange confusion about time. And the wife fell asleep, and she had this very bizarre dream that she was surrounded by tall beings who were trying to tell her something. And she says she does not have these kind of dreams. This was a very abnormal experience for her. At any rate, she woke up, and her husband was still driving, but he would not talk to her, which is very unusual, as he's a very, very talkative person. And they were both just very disoriented, and they got home much later than they should have. And they feel that something happened to them on that drive, but they don't know what. Now, of course, all of these are red flags to any UFO investigator. It sounds to me like they probably had an abduction. Of course, I can't say that for sure, but just goes to show that this sort of thing is still going on. The UFOs are not going to go away. In fact, they seem to really be stepping it up and increasing their presence. But we will see. Now I think it's time we get to our guest, because I'm very excited about this. This is an original topic. I don't think that you hear anyone ever talking about gravity hills. I didn't even know actually what gravity hills were until, you know, a couple of years ago when I actually wrote an article about them. Now, our guest tonight is Craig Tews. He's a researcher and filmmaker. He graduated with a degree in radio and TV and with a focus on film. He is an author, an instructor, a lecturer, and an avid filmmaker. He currently resides in Florida and is the founder of Tews Lightning Films. Craig, thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you, Preston. It's because of you I'm here. I would have made myself if it wasn't for you. Believe it or not.
Well, I'm really excited, you know, when you agreed to come on, because, you know, I watched your film. It was really actually a great film. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm
glad you saw the humor in it also.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that it was really nice the way you approached this subject. I mean, it wasn't dry, and yet you really had a lot of science to put out there.
Good. Thank you. I had stuff I even cut out.
Oh, really? Oh,
I was researching some ghosts. I had a laser beam. It just didn't work with the film, so I had about an hour worth of footage, and I ended up cutting it down to about 15 minutes. It was a half hour, but I wanted to be like a small segment you can like put on like maybe the Discovery Channel or something, so I eventually got it down to 15 minutes.
You know, I could see that being expanded into an hour easily and you go into other gravity hills and stuff like this. But before we get into the actual film, tell me, how did you get involved in, I mean, the paranormal? Did you always believe in this kind of stuff? Or?
Well, I was my father kind of influenced me. In fact, last year was the anniversary of his death, and I can tell you a little bit about a ghost story about him a little later on. But he always kind of influenced me a little bit. But when I came home from summer camp in 1976, Tom Brokaw was talking on, I guess, NBC, and he was mentioning how we landed on Mars with the Vikings around July 20th, and he said, is there life on Mars? He said, yes, us. And then a couple days later, I was in the supermarket with my mother, and it was World Daily News, some of those old National Enquirer-type magazines. It was a picture of the face on Mars. And even as a kid, I said, I was 10, and I said, that can't be. And I've been hooked ever since because it just kind of been with me all my life. And it's always intrigued me. And then I saw a commercial for Richard Hoagland's second video, and I was just hooked. And I've been into it ever since. It's been fed through my life since I was a little kid. And it just kind of started peaking. And it's very, very exciting.
It is.
And there's so much to it. There's so much more out there that we need to tap into.
I know, it's amazing.
And it's doable.
The skeptic, you know, people who say, oh, you know, ghosts aren't real, there's no face on Mars, blah, blah, blah. They haven't really looked at the evidence. I mean, because there's just so much of it. It's vast.
It's overwhelming. And that's why my next film, actually, I want to make it something that's so overwhelming that there's no way you can turn it down. Kind of like something like Fahrenheit 9/11, maybe even Inconvenient Truth, something that's so one-sided that will really shift people's minds and hope to have a whole paradigm shift about all this stuff, especially the UFOs as well, and Sidonia.
Right. All this stuff's going to come pouring out one of these days. I mean,
I hope so. I hope it's sooner than later. I really do. I mean, we can be part of that. Maybe we can make something happen. You never know.
Right, right. So you actually met Richard Hoagland at one point?
Yeah, actually, it was a very long time ago. It was about 1987. I was a massage therapist, and I offered him a massage, but he wasn't interested. But his girlfriend at the time was, so I actually went to the house in New Jersey. And I ended up meeting him, and we talked for about an hour, showed me a few cool things. And instead of paying me, I just didn't want any money, actually. Actually, they gave me a copy of their third videotape, and I was ecstatic. Didn't have a cover on, as a matter of fact. They just gave me the tapes, and just to be there, it was around my 27th birthday, so to me, it was like the best birthday present I've ever, ever had.
Wow.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky.
So what do you,
a long
what do
you time make, ago.
What do you make of Hoagland and his research? What do you think?
I strongly believe, I read the negative and I read the positive, but I've been following his work for quite some time, since at least 1987. And I really strongly believe that he has 85-90% positive. No two ways about it. He has some really good, solid research behind him, and the evidence is there. And I strongly believe that we, with him and maybe some other people, we can really, really change. And his stuff is definitely on target. No two ways about it.
Right. Well, I mean, he's really popular in the UFO community, and you know, it seems like mainstream science is still ignoring a lot of what he's saying. And I mean, you've seen some of these photographs, like what was it, the shard? Did you see that one?
Oh, absolutely, the shard, the castle. I mean, blown away. What else can you say? What else could it possibly be? The cube.
The shard was on the moon, and it was
right.
Apparently, I don't know how high this thing allegedly is, but it's obviously a artificially formed object that the astronauts photographed.
Absolutely. You know, I actually met an astronaut. I met Dr. Edgar Mitchell. He actually lives in my neighborhood, not too far around from where I am. And he actually gave a speech over at the Science Museum here in West Palm Beach. And my son got to ask him a question. He asked him what it's like to walk on the moon. He actually said you have to hop. And he actually hopped across the stage. And I actually asked him about the Hoagland stuff, because there's a picture of him standing in front of a structure behind him. And he didn't go into a tirade. He was actually very polite and very professional. He did say how it's basically a bunch of bunk and there's nothing up there. And, you know, I don't know if there's that military, you know, keep them quiet thing and don't say anything, you lose your credibility or what. But he was pretty adamant about it, to tell you the truth.
That there was nothing on the moon?
Yeah. Basically, there wasn't any structures. It was all a bunch of bunk that Hoagland had.
Oh, God.
He was pretty firm.
I disagree with that so firmly because
the evidence is there. Yeah, the evidence is there. It's so blatantly obvious.
I mean,
I'm curious what we haven't seen yet.
Right. We've got cases of people who are actually, what do they call it, blacking out the UFO photographs from the moon.
Oh, sure. Retouching and everything.
Right, before they actually come to the public.
Yes, absolutely.
And if you've seen, what's his name's book, Fred Steckling.
He
found alien bases on the moon. There's some photographs in there that are clearly UFOs on the moon. And I don't know how you could explain it otherwise.
Even the Blair cuspids, you can't explain. I mean, it's there. We need to go back there. It's only 250,000 miles away. I'll bet you one thing even bigger, because we haven't done anything outside of low Earth orbit in like 25, 30 years.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Yeah, I know. And we have plenty of money, plenty of time. I don't know. Maybe we're afraid. I've heard stories where we're told to stay away. I really don't know, and I wish I knew. But I'm going to guarantee you, somewhere, and it's probably a top secret, the military's already been there. And I'll bet you they did hijack the Mars Observer or took pictures of Cydonia, because that's something, if that technology really is there, there's no way our military could pass something like that up. And maybe rightfully so. Maybe for our own protection, maybe to left a marker here or some technology for us, maybe to protect our own planet from some alien invaders. I really don't know. But I don't see how the military can pass that information up. There's too solid evidence on Mars and the moon for them not to pass up,
right,
not to grasp.
Now, how big is the Martian face? Do you know approximately?
I think it's a mile. I know, like the DNM from Petro Molinar is also like 2 miles long. I think a mile high or something like that. I believe.
Wow.
If I remember correctly, the face is actually very large, also. And now they're saying that maybe the last picture I had seen, that maybe the last half that was in shadow was actually made of reflective material, which is also intriguing.
So
I want to put all it together and make another film, something that's more important that will change everything.
What do you make of all these monuments? I mean, what are they just? Do you think there's anything inside of them? Are they just a sign to us to, you know, remind us that aliens are out there? I mean, what do you think?
I definitely think there's something in them. It's too big of a structure to kind of ignore. Like, even the Great Pyramid here, there's always tunnels underneath, and all the pyramids here have tunnels inside of them or down below them. There's definitely something in there. No, I mean, it was there to get our attention. I mean, something like that stands out that much is there to get our attention, and it's there for us to go. It's beckoning for us to come. And it is definitely, there's something in there, something great, grand, possibly, something to make us better, take us to the next evolution, next evolution, next step. But there's something there for us. It's definitely something hidden, and we need to get there and get it and make ourselves better.
All right, that's my sense. You know, I noticed in the book, your little book that you put together, what's it called?
Yes.
Pieces of the Puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
That you've actually been around quite a lot of these types of sites, which
I guess
would be similar to the Cydonia site, but here on Earth, of course.
That's correct. Well, I follow the work of Carl Monk. He actually was he actually proved that the face on Mars actually existed mathematically, is what he did in some of his works. He did works called The Code, and I forgot where he lives right now, but I haven't kept up with his work, but I was with his work for quite about 6-7 years. And it turns out that he inspired me to go onto these places and actually make a few videotapes here and there of them, but they're similar to one. That's exactly what they are. They are there, and they are monuments to us, maybe to find. I just don't know.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure. I wish I knew a little bit more. But I'm working on it.
So when did you start making films?
Actually, I went to film school back in 1986 to 1988. In fact, I went to Cal State Northridge over there in California. And I made a few student films, acted. I'm a little terrible actor. But when it comes to making films, I started back then in school, and I have all my stuff that I've ever started and I've ever worked on. I have a whole backlog. So really about 1986, 87, I really started making a lot of movies. And I put a lot of stuff on tape. In fact, the book, Pieces of the Puzzle, I actually started making a film companion for. And it's all on VHS tape, and I have to transfer to digital. But I think I want to go back and also maybe finish that film at another point in the future. Really, really fairly soon I'd like to do that. I like to go to Coral Castle down here in Florida and a bunch of other places and put something together.
Right, the Coral Castle, that's the guy that put together these stones with somehow
yes.
that no one can lift. Is that right?
That's correct. Lead Scanlon, that's correct, for his Sweet 16. That's correct. It'll be very intriguing. I have not been there yet, but I'm going to go there, and I have a book on a guy who's a specialist, and he actually sent me a copy of his book, and I discussed it with him. So I'm going to download with his book, and you have to go down a certain time of year. You can see a lot of the different effects and stuff that take place with the moon and the stars, so I'm going to do that as well. I'm working on it.
Right, right. Well, our guest tonight is Craig Tews. You're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and we're talking about all sorts of things, including Gravity Hills. I want to get some Gravity Hill stuff, because this is, you know, really intriguing. I had never heard of it, but I wrote recently an article about Gravity Hills here in California, and I was surprised. Of course, they're all over the world, I found out, and the United States, but I found 5 here in California, and it was funny because your film actually covers one of them.
Yeah, in depth.
Right. So I was really, I mean, that's one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on the show.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you who don't know, a Gravity Hill, it's also called a magnetic hill, or sometimes an anti-gravity hill, and it is can be defined, I guess, as a section of road, usually, in which gravity doesn't, the normal rules of gravity don't seem to apply, and cars appear to roll uphill. Anything appears to roll uphill. And there's, of course, different theories to account for it, and I guess we'll get into that, which is what I really liked about your show, is you've approached this subject you know, open-mindedly, which I think so many people really lose a lot when they come to things skeptically and close off. And yet you were able to bring in all these, you know, angle finders and, all these different instruments, which was a lot of fun.
I guess all those physics classes didn't get lost, huh?
Right. No, I really enjoyed it because I was, I didn't even think of, half the stuff you were doing. And I wanted to, because I really wanted to figure out what was going on. So
do I, and I still don't know.
So tell me, how did you find out about, Gravity Hills?
Well, it was 1983, and I was living in Los Angeles, and my driving instructor, I was 17, from LA Unified School District, for like a week, he drove us around, and we drove around, actually. And for some odd reason, there was four of us in the car plus him, and he had me drive this little car, and he took me on this back road, and I have no idea where I am. And we're on Lopez Canyon. It's a real quiet road, and all through these canyons we're going, and finally pulled near a cemetery in the middle of nowhere. And he says, okay, put the car in neutral. I'm like, okay, put the car in neutral. He goes, now take your foot off the brake. So I did, and the car rolled up the hill. And I was amazed, and so was everyone else in the car.
Was this your driving instructor?
This is my driving instructor from LA Unified School District. He knew about it.
Wow.
Yeah, and I had no clue. And I had been living in Sylmar at the time for about 2 years, and I didn't know anything about it. So after that, I said, this is really cool. So I took all my friends there, took my dates there and everything, and everyone was really quite impressed. And every time I go to California now, I live in a different place. I lived in New York for a while. I always go to Gravity Hill and take my kids and my wife and just take everyone to Gravity Hill because it's different. And then I read your article. I was here in Florida. I read your article in Atlantis Magazine, and it just sparked me. Something clicked. This has been sitting in my head since 1983. And when I heard that your article, he made an article about this. I know where this place is. Why didn't someone put this on film? I go, why don't I just put it on film? And from there, I continued to put together a couple experiments, a couple different ideas, and kind of lay it out. And my father had died a year ago yesterday, as a matter of fact. So I had to go help my mother out about October last year, help him with a few things and stuff, and some few ghost things about that, too, that I had experienced. And I was out there during my break times, working with my mother. I went out and shot a film about Gravity Hill and put it all together. And I have you to thank for it. You actually inspired me or clicked something in my mind that made me go out and do something. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
The way the world works, synchronicities.
Right. It's funny because, I heard about these Gravity Hills. I'm like, hey, there's one right here where I live. I live here in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, so did I. I live in the San Fernando Valley, too. Yeah.
I actually attended Northridge, too. That's where I graduated.
Wow. Wonderful. When did you graduate?
Let me see, 1987 or so. 1988.
You were at the film. What department you were in? I was in the film at the same time. Because I graduated in 88. I was at the film department.
Oh, I was in the English department.
Wow. How do you like that? What a small world it is.
Really?
A fellow alumni. I love it.
So anyway, I heard about this Gravity Hill, and I'm like, wow, I've got to go visit it. But no one knew where it was. And I finally, people were telling me, oh, yeah, I've been there, but they didn't know where it was. I finally found someone who thought, he might be able to remember. Mm-hmm. And we drove up there, and it was, like you said, on Lopez Canyon.
Sort of the middle of nowhere.
Right out there, at the end of the valley there, at the northern end, sort of.
And, hidden away and tucked away.
We drove, right up to it, actually, and we drove right over it a couple of times before we saw it. And we parked, and sure enough, we parked
no
right at the bottom.
There. Nothing there to mark it at all. There's no marker that says this is a Gravity Hill, put your car in neutral and roll up the hill. There's nothing there.
Right, and it's amazing. These aren't on any maps anywhere, really. Only the locals know about them. It's kind of really cool that way, I think.
Yeah, in a way it is kind of cool. I actually sent my copy of my film to the Chamber of Commerce of Sylmar. I have not heard back from them, but I thought maybe we can do something, kind of get it out there, maybe even promote Sylmar, Chamber of Commerce a little bit. So we'll see what happens with that. Never know what'll come out of that.
Well, I know that there are a couple of Gravity Hills in, Massachusetts or...
Yes.
Something
Connecticut. There's even one here in Florida, Lake Wales, but everyone knows about that one. So it's kind of almost no fun in a way.
Yeah, but doesn't one of them charge a fee to go on it, or they own the property?
It's a good question. I believe that's correct. I can't remember where that is, but I believe that is correct. That kind of takes the fun out of it, too, actually.
Right, because what the fun part is to go up there with your friends late at night, make them show them the cemetery.
Right, yeah. I was out there. That's right. That's right. It is said if you put powder on the back of your car and go to the Gravity Hill at night, you'll find fingerprints on your car. Because they always say that some old lady died, got hit by a truck and died. She always wants to help people up the hill, so it's her fingerprints you find in the back of the car. You hear all kinds of crazy stories.
Right.
It's actually kind of interesting.
It is. Well, that gets me to the very different theories to explain Gravity Hills, which is one being ghosts do it, because they're often next to these graveyards, it seems,
that's
whether
correct.
That's coincident or not.
Yeah, I mean, the graveyard is, the fence is like 5-6 feet from the actual gravity hill.
Right.
So, it's very possible. When I was out there, actually, as you drive on that Lopez Canyon, I found a cop, a California Highway Patrol, a chip, and I asked him about it. I figured, these local guys, they always seem to know stuff, but this guy knew nothing about it. So I told him where it was, and about 10 minutes later, he came out, and he says, so where is it? I said, it's right here, this hill. I go, you put your car in neutral, you roll up the hill. The car rolls up the hill. I said, go ahead, trust me. I'm sitting there hoping this works. I know it's always worked before. And this cop has a very heavy car. He has all this patrol stuff on the top of it. Put the car in neutral, and he rolled up the hill. I'm like, oh, thank goodness it works. And he did it backwards, and it worked. And he said, thank you, and then took off. So he actually, I taught him about gravity hill.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Teaching law enforcement.
Yeah.
Well, law enforcement should know about this stuff anyway. I mean, they're the ones who handle the UFO reports a lot of the times.
True.
All this stuff. They're on the front line, so they should know.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. And, I was out there. I was out there at 11 o'clock at night, because I said, let me see if I can get some ghosts. I was shooting into the cemetery. What I decided to do is I put my camera into different film modes at different shutter speeds, and I'm out there. It's 11 o'clock at night. I'm trying to get scared. I have a dog with me in the car and my camera, and I'm out there just trying not to be scared and hoping I catch something, and unfortunately I didn't catch a darn thing. But I tried. But I had to cut that out of the film because it just didn't play well into the whole story.
Well, I went there, and I went there a couple of times, actually, and I tried it both ways in different directions with my car in each different direction. Mm-hmm. So, and it worked on either side. One side, of course, seemed to work best. And I'm wondering, is it caused by a gravity anomaly, or is it an optical illusion, or is it ghosts, and what's going on here? So you approached this scientifically and tried to figure out this mystery in your film. So tell us how you approached that and the instruments that you brought and all that.
Well, I'm a massage therapist, so I have a lot of science behind me and some art behind me, and I kind of walk both the Eastern and Western kind of philosophies, and I get to look outside the box. So I looked through all I had taken a class in physics. I was trying to get to medical school, and so I had to take physics and biology and everything. So I kind of looked back to those experiments. And what I even tried, because the road has a white line on one side and the center line, a double yellow center line, I decided, let me try and put the car along the dirt on the side of the road where the road hasn't been paved over. And I did not put this in my film, and maybe I should have, because I do have it still on tape. The car still rolled up the hill outside of the anomaly. So that told me that it's not the road, number one. So that was the end of that. I said, let me try different weights. So that's why I have a tennis ball. And the tennis ball rolls right up straight to the camera, which I love that shot. It's my favorite shot. In fact, it's called Clip 47. I love that shot. And I said to myself, let me try something else. Water. Water always seeks its own level. So that's why I poured some water down, and the water rolls straight up the hill. And I did no cuts, no edits, because I wanted everyone to see that there was no trickery involved or anything. And I tried to set the camera down right on the middle of the line so everyone can see that's the direction the wall rolled up. Then I tried a dog, and my dog was afraid to go into the anomaly, which I thought was kind of interesting. And lastly, what I thought was interesting, a friend of mine's a runner, so he suggests I try running up the hill. Well, I'm not in the greatest shape these days. I'm getting old. So what I tried to do is I did a thing with my cell phone. So I sat at the bottom of the hill, and I saw I had two bars. So I ran up to the middle of it, and I videotaped it. I still had two bars. By the time I got to the top of the hill, and I measured it, by the way, it's 100 feet long. So I know at least how long it is. And when I got to the top of the hill, I'm huffing and puffing. Oh, still got two bars. Let's raise the bar. So I realized just because I walked up that and the hill, and California is very hilly, and the area itself is very hilly, that by taking my breath away, it showed me, and you can even hear me on the video, a little out of breath, that it was indeed an uphill walk. So there's no two ways about it. It's definitely uphill, both from a car point of view and from a physical walking point of view. Wow.
Right. You also brought like a level and an angle test.
I brought a level. That's correct. And the level and pitch. It was interesting. Those two things showed a very slight, like 3-degree downward pitch, which I thought was very odd. So the level seemed like that, and I tried to balance it out. It was just like about 4 millimeters off the ground, so it seemed to be going downhill with the lever. But everything else rolled uphill, both in the middle and from the middle of the road and from the each lane, so I just don't understand it.
Some of these effects that you're describing remind me of the same effects that people have reported in crop circles, like their dogs.
Really?
Their pets won't want to go in them, and, instruments.
Very intriguing.
Electronic effects and stuff like that. So I wonder.
Let's apply some of the stuff to that. Maybe we should go there and do that. Maybe someone can fly us into a crop circle in England, and we can start doing some work. Maybe get on videotape and really try to feel all these things and sense all these things. be a great idea. Maybe we can apply the two together. And one thing I thought was interesting, I was interviewing some people at the cemetery, and the cemetery next door called Glenhaven has been around since about 1942, 1943. And I was told that people, even though when they bury someone, they still go to Gravity Hill to see if it still works, if it's still there. So the Gravity Hill's been there since at least 1942, which is very interesting.
Wow.
But the other thing I discovered, yeah, as I was talking to this other guy that would work there, he told me the back half of the cemetery fell about 6 feet after, I think it was the 94 and the 97 earthquake. Well, I've been going there since 1983, and yet here it is, 2006, 2007, and it still works. So I went out there, and I found the spot where the back of the cemetery dropped. It was all cemented over. And as I turned the camera, the fault line would have run straight through the dead center of Gravity Hill. So I went out to the other side of Gravity Hill, and I found where the fault line was, where it cracked the road. So there was a fault that actually runs through Gravity Hill. I do not know how deep it is, but Gravity Hill was not affected by this fault line at all whatsoever.
Really?
Which I thought was very intriguing.
You know, it's also interesting is when I was searching for this Gravity Hill, I sent out a bunch of email requests. And
should have called me.
So we eventually got we eventually connected. But
yeah, that's true.
I sent out all these requests, and I started getting reports of another Gravity Hill in Pasadena, and I thought, oh, people are confusing the two.
Mm.
But
yes,
after a while, it became clear now that there was, in fact, another one. And I finally found this guy who said he knew exactly where it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
In, on Rubio Canyon in Altadena. It's actually pretty
Altadena,
easy to find.
Sure.
Maybe it was Altadena or Pasadena. I'm not quite sure, but at any rate, I went up there, and it was right where he said it was. It was really actually very easy to find. It was very obvious, and I think actually a little better than the Lopez Canyon one, personally.
Was it marked? Was there a marker saying where the Gravity Hill was?
No, but once you know these things, once you've seen one, you kind of have a feel for it.
Really?
What it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And at any rate, it's right next to this giant wash, and I saw it, and I parked my car, and it actually moved very quickly up this hill, and it was much more dramatic, I thought.
Yeah, Gravity Hill and Lopez Canyon, you only move about 10 miles an hour up the 100-foot
incline. This one made you move a little bit faster.
Mm.
And I pulled over, and I was taking pictures, and I pulled my car way off the Gravity Hill because I didn't want to make a nuisance, right? I didn't want anyone to see me while I was taking pictures.
Or get hit by a car.
And so what was funny is I saw like two or three cars. I mean, several cars would drive by periodically, but two or three cars stopped and tested the Gravity Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it happen, and so this was obviously the right place. And
yes.
The locals know about it. And one guy was trying to show off to me. He's like, look. and it was really dramatic, people say it's an optical illusion. If it is, it's very convincing, I'll have to say that.
Very convincing. Especially when you have things of different weight roll. I mean, a tennis ball weighs, 4 ounces? To roll that this such a minor weight to roll up a hill, water. I mean, I just poured some water down and some soda even, which I didn't include, and it's still up the hill. And then the car has got to weigh, a quarter of a ton out of a small car? I mean, it doesn't matter. Everything rolls up the hill.
Right.
It's just amazing.
I like the way you revved the engine to make sure that...
Yeah, I want everyone to know.
Yes.
Revved it really loud. I almost redlined it. I was trying to be very clear.
Yeah, that was clever.
That's why, too, at the beginning of the film, too, I put the magnets. I just wanted to see if there was a magnet down below, something that changed the magnetics, but there was nothing there either.
Huh.
That's something
I
tried.
With the Rubio Canyon one and the Lopez Canyon one, I noticed that they were very similar in that they were both, in a very mountainous area.
Yes.
They were sort of on a mountain,
in the middle
road
of nowhere,
coming down, sort of at the base of a very large mountain. And I thought maybe that has something to do with it because the gravity is not uniform as people believe it is. There are actually a lot of fluctuations in the gravitational field of Earth.
That is correct. In fact, you can get a report from the USGS survey, as a matter of fact. And the moon's like that, too. They have the mask cons, so the actual, when the surveyors went around the moon, they actually dipped when they hit those dark mask cons. There was a lot more gravity that pulled and dipped it in its orbit. That's a very, very true. You're absolutely correct.
So, and again, we don't even know what gravity is, right?
Right. You're right. Is it the unifying force? It's one of the forces? We don't know. It's unfortunate. But we have an anomaly here that needs to be checked out even more thoroughly and maybe tie them all together and figure out the answer. Because it may be, it may be a confirmer that there's something that we don't know and that this can lead us to another answer down the road.
Right. Do we have a caller? Did I hear
Yeah, hi, your anomaly is named Phil.
Hi, Phil.
Yes. do you have a question, Phil?
Yes. I just wanted to mention, you're catching me by surprise with this topic. I didn't realize that magnetic hills were any kind of anomaly at all. I had read, you know, some years ago that this is caused, it's not gravity, you know, behaving in any strange way. It is that the slope of the apparent slope locally where you're standing looks like uphill, but the true slope with respect, you know, to the center of the Earth and the direction in which gravity acts is, in fact, downhill. And the 3 degrees you mentioned, you know, observing with your level is consistent with the, you know, the acceleration speeds you're getting out of your vehicles. In fact, you could probably do some physics and calculate just from the acceleration speeds just what the slope is. But the 3 degrees you mentioned would be just enough to allow something to roll uphill on a gravel shoulder, as you mentioned. And I wouldn't have expected it to be much more than 3 degrees because otherwise you'd get some pretty vicious accelerations that you would especially notice if you were running yourself, as you mentioned. You should have noticed that. When you're running down a hill, or what is effectively downhill, you can't help accelerating, you know, beyond the normal horizontal sense of running normally horizontally. So I don't think this is an anomaly at all. I mean, I'm very convinced by that explanation, aren't you?
Well, first of all, I guess you've telling me that I wasted my entire time and my editing and everything else, and I should just give up, right? That's what you're telling me?
No, not at all. I mean, it's not a mystery, but it's certainly fun.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this, though. There's about 45,000 miles of road in the United States.
Right.
There's 830 routes throughout the country. And yet, here it is, maybe there's about 13, 14 actual gravity hills in the entire country. There's more around the world. So why aren't there these few stretches of road? I mean, you'd think there'd be a lot more anomalies with 43,000 miles of road. So there still remains to be something to be seen about that. And I do agree with you, the physics, and it's actually very easy to do with the 3-degree incline, the 100-foot, and about 10 miles an hour. Very easy to figure out, and I agree with you. But there's something here that needs to be addressed, and we need to find out what the answer is.
There is another measurement you could make that might help convince you, and that is to use a plumb bob to determine the true gravitational vertical. And you will see that is not perpendicular to your road, you know, wherever you happen to be standing. You should see that.
Well, I actually was going to try that. That was actually on my list. But I didn't know how to use a plumb light, and I don't want to be, you know, lie or try to mislead anyone through my film. So I decided to not to do that. So I'll tell you what, maybe next time out in California, we'll get together and we'll figure it out. How's that sound?
One thing to note, just from the physics, if where you're standing is level road, then your plumb bob should be vertical. If your plumb bob hangs 1, 2, 3 degrees off that vertical, that's the same slope that you're dealing with. Anyway, just wanted to contribute that.
Thank you.
There's one thing. When you're researching the paranormal, if you get hung up on something that's not really a mystery, it takes away from your credibility. You guys are talking and investigating all kinds of true anomalies. So it's not good to get tripped up over something that's not, in fact, an anomaly at all.
Well, have you ever actually visited one of these gravity hills?
Well, I live in Quebec, and we've got one here, and I haven't visited one, but I had heard about it, and I'm totally convinced that before we start invoking new weird physics, that careful study of the geography will reveal, or careful measurements will reveal what the true slope is.
Right. Well, that's actually what we're doing. We're exploring this, and you know, a lot of people do think it's a mystery, and it's a controversial subject, whether or not, you know, it is solved or not.
Okay, well, anyway, look, keep up.
You should visit one. The optical illusions are really convincing. I would recommend it, if that's what they are.
Yes, the illusion is that there's an anomaly here, when in fact it's totally prosaic. You know, you got to go with the simple first and disprove the simple before you invoke something abnormal.
Yes, but what you do have to do is actually visit the place and study it. So that's what we're doing.
That's correct.
Right.
All right, thank you for the call.
I'm listening to your data, and that's good enough for me. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Well, that was interesting, you know.
Yes.
You get all, you know, this is a mystery, I'm convinced, you know. Yes. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it. You know, I don't know.
Believe me, I ran uphill. I was out of breath. All my stuff goes uphill. It's, you know, I don't know.
It's, you know, and there's, these gravity hills are actually related to a lot of other mystery spots.
mm-hmm.
which are located, you know, like there's one in Santa Cruz, and there's, and a lot of people think these are optical illusions, and they very may well be. I don't know.
I don't think it's an optical illusion. I think it really is something there. I think there's something, too, when everything rolls uphill, inside the anomaly, outside the anomaly, and the fact that it's next to a cemetery. And I was interviewing a lady who worked there, and just to add another anomaly, besides the fact that there's a cemetery next to it, is that someone had called this lady and asked about there's a stone out there, a picture of the Virgin Mary that cries. And sure enough, there's a nativity stone out there, a big cemetery stone. I guess, I don't even know if it's a, you know, it's a cemetery marker with a picture of the Virgin Mary holding, I guess, baby Jesus, and says nativity on it. And supposedly she cries during the summertime at some point. And I actually have a shot of that, but I don't have her crying. I have no idea the specific date that she actually cried. So it's, there's a few anomalies just in that area. And the funny thing is, as you know very well, when you're driving Lopez Canyon, you're in the middle of nowhere, and then boom, in the middle of nowhere comes this big cemetery that's been there since the 1940s. And there's some very famous people that are buried there, so it's not like it's an unknown cemetery.
Ryan, it's an interesting phenomenon. Whatever's causing it, I find it fascinating. I mean, there's certainly a lot of fun to visit.
Yes, it is. It's fun to take your dates and friends there. It's intriguing.
It really is. It's a lot of fun. You know, that's fascinating.
It is.
A lot of fun. So, so you've seen a ghost, huh? You had some ghosts coming?
Yes. Yeah, I've had some experience. And when I was out, in fact, when I was out shooting Gravity Hill, I was staying at my parents' house, and I was still in Florida time. So I had got up at 4 o'clock, which to me was still 7 o'clock, and I went to Tommy's, my favorite place over on there in Roscoe in the 405. So as I'm leaving the house, I decided to take the dog with me, and I suddenly locked the door behind me. So I locked the door, and as I walked past the garage door is open. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I said, there's no way Mother will let that garage door be open. So I don't know if I should close it or what, so I went to Tommy's and came back. And so I told my mother, she says, no, the garage door was closed. Your father was probably welcoming you to be here. That's what he did. He opened the garage door. He worked along the electricity. Now, the very same night, we actually turned all the lights off of the house. When we got up the next morning, his office light was on.
Huh.
So he seemed to be working through the electricity of the house. And my mother told me, I had sent her a DVD. I made a DVD tribute to my father. And she said, yeah, I put the DVD on, and all I got was snow. Well, if a DVD goes on like that, it shouldn't be snow. If anything, it'll be a blue screen or a blank screen. So he must have somehow messed somehow or changed the electricity going through. Maybe he didn't want, my mother said, maybe he didn't want me to be sad. So he actually changed it to snow when really it should just be a blank screen. So he somehow messed with the electricity. And also my mother says, now it's been a year since he died. She still says the fan goes on sometimes. Even if she leaves the fan, it'll go on faster when she comes back upstairs. So just to jump to the ghost part of it, about 3 months ago, I was missing my father. I felt bad. And about 3-4 days, and one night, about 3 days later, I was in bed, and middle of the night, I felt something looking at me, or something was in my room next to my bed. So I'm, you know, here it is late at night, and I'm thinking to myself, should I open my eyes? All right, I'm going to open my eyes. So I opened my eyes, and there was, at the time, I couldn't see. There were definitely, was someone standing there, tall person. My father was about, in fact, my father was 6'2", wearing a white T-shirt. And, you know, I was opening my eyes. It took me a little while to make out the face. Couldn't quite see his legs. They were wearing, like, dark pants. My father was wearing a white T-shirt. And I realized it was my father looking at my body.
Huh.
And he didn't look, man, he died when he was 62, but he didn't look like he was 62. He looked like he did from pictures when I was a kid, like he was in his early 20s, mid-20s, lean, strong, powerful, and just looking at me. And looking at my body, not at my face, which probably would have scared me a little bit. And I closed my eyes, I opened them again, and he was still there, just standing there, breathing, and looking at me. And then I closed my eyes again. And I opened them, and I was debating real quick if I should open them again. I opened them again, and I fell asleep. I don't even know if I think I opened my eyes again that third time, and he was gone.
Wow. Did he look solid?
Yeah. Oh, he was solid. He was solid there in a white T-shirt, lean, tan, strong, powerful, and young. And that was the impression I got. I think he was trying to tell me that I'm okay. Wherever I am, I'm okay. I'm strong and solid. I'm back to maybe the age that I'm best at, maybe, where I felt the best. And I'm okay. And I think that's what he was trying to tell me.
So are you
and
convinced
I felt better after that.
Are you convinced there's life after death and all of that?
Yes, absolutely. There are so many things. We have a very small view of vision. There's, you know, ultra UV light. There's all kinds of other wavelengths. We have a very small, narrow view of vision. And even our understanding of energy, I actually teach Oriental theory. to my students, and there's something there on another level that you can feel and move, and there's another energy just in the health capacity with the chi and the energy, and there's something else there. I don't know if these people are stuck between worlds or they're here to calm us for the people that are still living. I'm just not sure what to make of it, but there is something there. And when I went to the San Fernando Mission, I had taken my daughter and my mother. We went to the San Fernando Mission, which isn't too far from there, from the Gravity Hill.
Right,
and
that's haunted, right?
That's haunted. It's funny, though, because on the way to the Bob Hope Memorial, there's a beautiful statue, and I think it's supposed to be the Virgin Mary. And my daughter says, when does she cry? And I see in the video, she doesn't cry, Rory. Well, it turns out I found out later on when I got home and did a little more research on San Fernando Mission, she does cry. They didn't say when, but she does cry. My daughter picked up on it somehow.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, very intriguing. And I also found out I walked into the church as part of the mission. It was a beautiful church, by the way. So I walk in, and again, I have everything on videotape and everything else. We walk past, then we went out the church, went to the Bob Hope thing. Turns out when I got home, I found out, I did some more research on the mission, I found out that there's a lady, a ghost, who prays in the front row. Again, no one said when exactly, so I was a little upset about that, because I'd like to have been there when that person was praying. Maybe I can catch them on videotape. Again, I would try to put my camera at different speeds, different shutter speeds, to try to catch their presence.
Right.
So it's always
right.
funny. Each time I go somewhere and I leave and I do more research, I always find out more stuff. I just do my research really thoroughly beforehand, you know? And just wait around all day to see a ghost.
Well, that's what's great about paranormal research is really the field is wide open. It's begging for investigators. It's begging for some solid research and all of this stuff.
Yes, it is. You know, that's what they want to say. We're all doing our stuff. You're doing a great job. You have some great books. I think I read your UFOs over at Topanga Canyon many years ago, and you've done some great work. No if ands, buts about it. And there's other people done some great work, both in the paranormal and the UFO field and everything. And we're all doing our own thing. We're all really trying hard and working hard, but we really need to pull together and actually have some solid evidence, presentable, hardcore evidence that we can present to the scientific community and to the people of the world and actually make changes to our own paradigms and shift them and maybe bring us to a better place where we're supposed to be. And instead of working on all different worlds, I really think we need to get together, and the time is right for a long, it's called long-form documentary, anything over 45 minutes, because you have The Inconvenient Truth and Fahrenheit 9/11 that really change things. And if we could do something along those lines, everyone together, everyone pitch in and everyone have a piece of the puzzle, so to speak, and put it together, we can really make a change, an effective change in our society to make us a better group of people in general and really raise our conscious awareness. And I think that's really important. I think it's almost where we're at, tell you the truth. I think we're just about there to start doing that. And I would call on people like you and Stan Friedman and Richard Hoagland and everyone else to get together and have a summit and figure out what's the next best course of action for us to do.
Right. You're right, it's high time for that. I remember Dateline,
it's high time.
2 years ago, maybe three, said they're putting together this show on UFOs that was going to be cutting edge, it was going to break everything wide open, and it didn't, of course. It was just the same old thing.
It's always the same footage. Everything that happened, you know, I love the UFO footage from Mexico. I think that stuff is great. But unfortunately, again, it's solid stuff. During the eclipse, I'm sure we all remember that.
Oh, yeah.
I can't forget the fleet of UFOs there. But, you know, and I hate to say this, it's solid stuff, and let's use it, but it's also over 10 years old already. So what else has happened since then? Let's get that. Let's get the most recent footage. And, you know, I encourage people, let's get the most recent footage. Give it to me, even, or maybe you, if you'd be willing to. Maybe we can edit it and sit down and put some together and really put, like, the best evidence forward that we can. Something that's so overwhelming that would really cause a shift in our consciousness.
Right, because there's so much evidence out there, and people just don't know where to go to. I mean, we should have a...
That's correct. And, you know, the problem is also I find all these shows, which are actually, you know, okay, you know, to an extent, same old stuff, like you said, because they always tell the history, Betty and Barney Hill, which is all very important, and a gentleman who first found and coined the word, you know, flying saucers, that's all important, no two ways about it, but we all know the history. It's time to get the solid evidence out there and really cause a shift. And that's what's important. I think that's where we really need to be at this point. We're in the second millennium here. Let's make a change. Let's make us better. Let's move on. Let's make more like Star Trek, where everyone, you know, does things to make themselves better. There's no money. Well, that probably never happened. But let's make things better. Let's do it.
Right. Well, there is going to be a disclosure. I think it's either going to come from one of three places. Either the government is going to disclose, or the UFOs are going to come forward and disclose.
That would be great.
Over here, or it's going
That's
to be
great.
It's going to be the people. You know, they're going to come together with a bunch of evidence and just force this issue wide open. And that's, I think, what is actually going to happen.
Well, you know what? I'm behind that 100%. That's what I've been saying all this time. I mean, you even mentioned earlier in your show, and I agree with you about there's not enough nonfiction UFO films, and I totally agree with you. Let's do it. We're both on the same page there. Maybe because we both went to Northridge. Who knows?
Hey.
But let's just start affecting that change by all means.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm ready. I got my camera and I'm ready to go. I got my Mac to edit everything.
I want to make a film of my book, UFOs Over Topanga. I think that would make a great film.
It would make a great film. Because I live not too far from there, so I thought it was very interesting. That's why. Mm-hmm. You know, also, pretty much where all that stuff took place, Charles Manson had his ranch over there not too far from there.
Right.
Over the Santa Pass. I thought that was kind of interesting, too. One of those little things, those little synchronicities, I thought was interesting.
Right. There's a lot of crazy stuff that went on in Topanga Canyon, actually.
So. Yeah. There's a lot of hidden history in California. That's for sure. I lived there for 12 years, and there's a lot of hidden history, just in the valley alone.
Right.
I mean, we should make let's make our next book Haunted San Fernando Valley, because there's so much there.
I'm telling you, you're not kidding. Okay,
yeah.
Now you put together this film Gravity Hill of Sylmar, and you also got this book that you put together, Pieces of the Puzzle, which I like the cover, actually, this guy being struck by lightning.
That's me when I was about 5 years younger and about 50 pounds lighter.
That's a pretty interesting. You know, I like the title. And
because we all have a piece of the puzzle. All of us do. And let's put it together. Let's dig through our heads and put a piece of the puzzle together and put the puzzle together and see what the whole thing shows. That was part of the whole idea.
Right. Well,
I even talked a little bit about that.
You explored all sorts of different stuff in that one. It was really interesting.
I wish it was more of a common theme, but I just kind of presented different pieces of the puzzle, which is exactly what it came out to be.
Right.
Did you like the thing about the African face? Did you see that east coast of Africa?
I was looking at that, and you had all sorts of interesting stuff, like ancient monuments, the iguana thing.
Yes.
I thought that was really interesting.
Yes. And I found out that was true, actually, because they talked about it. In fact, it's said in Tulum that if you spend, for every half hour you spend on the beach, you'll add a year to your life, because there's so much strength and energy there, and that's like a high-energy spot. And the interesting thing is, when you're walking towards Tulum from the bus, it is 110 degrees of dry heat. But as soon as you walk up onto the Tulum Plateau, it's as cool as can be and is absolutely stunningly beautiful. So the energy you can immediately feel, just the wind and the earth energy alone is there and changes everything. So it's very refreshing and very enlightening, too, as a matter of fact. I recommend everyone go to these sites, Gravity Hill and pyramids and Mayan temples, and really see if they feel a difference. Like that gentleman who called, he's never really been to Gravity Hill. And like you said, you actually can sense when there's a Gravity Hill, because you went to the second one, Altadena, that it just kind of builds something in us and it kind of sets us off. It hits our subconscious and hopefully dribbles out, so to speak, or strains out through osmosis into our consciousness and makes us better people, like your article did for me, because this has been sitting in my head about Gravity Hill for so long. You just brought it out.
Right. Well, I liked you did really good first-hand research. So many people do armchair research, you know, and that's not
I'm out there in the field. Armed with a video camera, and I'm out there in the field.
Right. So do you have a website, or how can people get a hold of your film if they want to?
Well, I decided not to do the website just yet because I want to do it really well and I want to focus on something. So I haven't done the website. I did a website for a short time, but I will have, if anyone wants to email me, I will answer your emails personally. And I can be reached either at craigtuz@consultant.com, and that's CRAIGTUZ, that's T as in Thomas, UZ, or tuzlightning@hotmail.com.
Okay, Tuz.
So happily, craigtuz@consultant.com.
And Tuz Lightning.
That's correct. And I will happily, I'll answer anyone's questions. If they want to call me, I'll give them my number personally if they want to. I have a personal number, and I'll be happy to discuss anything with them. I want to help see maybe we can change someone's consciousness. And I think you and I tonight really did that, as a matter of fact. I think we really did some more good work here.
I think so.
Can I tell you one more ghost story?
Yeah, sure. We have like 2 minutes.
2 minutes, I'll make it a good story. I used to work at a nice hotel as a massage therapist. There was a girl that worked there. We hung out together for the day with a few other people. Later on the day, I got home. My friend called me. She was dead. I thought, gee, car accident. Turns out she was murdered.
God.
Well, 2 days later, in fact, that was the same day I saw the Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. I had to go to this ceremony, and everyone was there, all the therapists, some of her friends, and her mother was there. I had my two kids because I was taking them to see the astronaut, Edgar Mitchell. So I was right next to the podium, and in between me and the podium was a table of her with some pictures of her. Her mother gave a little eulogy. She walked towards me after she was done, and between me, her and me was the table with her stuff. As soon as she walked past that table, her candle bent over. It didn't flicker. It bent over and went out as she passed her table. And I said, did she see that? Not that, did my kids see anything? Because kids are innocent. My kids are very young. And I said, gee, what if they saw it? They never mentioned anything to me that they saw something. So maybe she wasn't there present, her physical ghost, so to speak, if you can say that. But her energy must have blown up that candle. Her mother looked straight at me and said, can you light my candle? She must have sensed her candle on her or something like that. So I lit her candle, and I was just really blown away by that whole situation. So, and she was a therapist, so maybe she has some kind of connection to the universe. I don't know. And maybe she still managed to talk to people or communicate through some kind of energy field. Never really could have a chance to experience it. But I don't think anyone else saw that the candle just bent over and went out.
Wow, very interesting.
Yeah.
Got a lot of interesting stories. Well, I want to thank you, Craig, for coming onto the show tonight. Our time is actually up.
Okay, pleasure was mine. I thank you for letting me share my time and energy with you guys.
Oh, it was a pleasure for me as well.
Okay.
That's our show tonight, guys. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. Our guest tonight has been Craig Tuz. Is that the correct pronunciation?
That's correct.
T-U-Z, Craig Tuz. You should check out his film, Gravity Hill of Sylmar, and his book, Pieces of the Puzzle. You can get a hold of him through your email, which is what again?
It's craigtuz@consultant.com or tuzlightning@hotmail.com.
All right. That's how you can get a hold of him if you'd like, or you can always get a hold of him through me if that doesn't work. But thank you again, Craig. And we'll have to have you on the show again sometime in the future.
I would love it.
All right, guys. Till next week, have a great evening. Our guest next week is Craig Campobasso, and he's going to be talking about his experiences with extraterrestrials and his new book, Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial. Thank you all for joining us, and until next week, have a great evening.